Hello, everybody, and welcome to Whispers Radio here on AM 1600 WKKX, the Valley's Watchdog, and UPRN, the UFO Paranormal Radio Network. It is 76 degrees and rainy. Finally, we get some rain.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, my gosh.
It's not like my weeds don't need any watering. But...
Yeah. Well, the worst thing is it's been so hot when I went outside and it started raining. I was like, gosh, this water's really warm. Like, the rain was hot.
I'll tell you, when did it come down so hard? Thursday or Friday?
I didn't see anything coming down hard.
Oh, we got a really bad storm through here. And the gutters were so full that by the time I got from here to the truck across the street, I was wet up to my knees. It had to have been Friday. And I couldn't believe it. And that water coming down those off the hot cement was just like bath water. Just like bath water. So.
That's nice. Yeah. It's like being in a shower outside.
Yeah, kind of.
You didn't take a shower outside, did you?
Do what?
Did you take a shower outside?
Why? Were you watching?
No. You supposedly, I guess, according to Steve, when I walked in, being undressed in certain portions of your body can get you in trouble for being outside. You would get a 6-game suspension, I guess, or something.
Ben Roethlisberger, keep it in your pants.
I don't think he can.
I don't either. He must just love to look at it and handle it and play with it.
And there's a time and a place for that. Like,
yes.
When you're two,
yeah,
and you want to run through your house naked and your parents are okay with that.
Well,
super.
Even at 29, if you want to run through your house,
oh, yeah,
naked,
I mean,
be my guest, but you don't.
Well, and, okay, outside, 2 years old. Yeah, I mean, that's not as horrible as.
On golf fairways.
Yeah, yeah.
Women's bathrooms in bars, you know. Time and a place for everything.
What are you trying to say?
Ben boy.
Yeah.
Nick?
No, I'm just saying, you know, Ben said nothing happened. Okay.
All right, anyway, give us a call, 304-214-1600. If you're out of the area, 1-866-514-1600. I want to thank everybody. If you're my buddy on Facebook, all the nice things to say and all your... Yeah, Lola.
Sorry, Jordan.
And all the well-wishing and prayers through the week. I spent a few days in the hospital, and I got down on my back while I was at work.
Welcome to roofing.
Yeah. So everybody who was praying for me and everything, I appreciate it.
That's good.
Very nice.
And I will from now on.
You will.
I don't check Facebook very often. So I'm sorry, Jordan. You should have just called me. That's what telephones are for.
Facebook's one of those things though. If you're not there right when they posted, it's hard. I mean, I don't visit every single person on my Facebooks.
Nick only has like 2 friends, so he doesn't know how to use it.
I have a lot of friends, like 10. I don't know. I actually have no idea how many Facebook friends I have. It used to be like the status symbol, like, oh, I've got 700. Like, none of those people are your friends.
In Nick's case?
It happens.
They're not.
Actually, you remember on my MySpace, I actually have that comic on there, you know, and the guy's crying, and woman's like, what's wrong with him? He just realized that none of his friends on MySpace are really his friends.
Yeah.
So, you know.
That's it.
Got to keep that thing straight. Keep stuff like that straight.
All right. Also, August 6th, I want to throw this out there because I'm involved.
Yeah. It's your show.
And yeah, right?
Okay.
I can go there.
Yes, you can.
August 6th, the Capitol Theater here in downtown Wheeling. My band's playing. It's our CD release, our new album, Winter. Or Winter. That was our last one. Illusions. We're releasing it at 7 o'clock. So, I ask everybody to come.
So are you going to really be there?
Will I be there?
Or is it an illusion?
Oh, that's deep.
Yeah.
That's deep. I'm going to be there, though, because it's going to be a fun show. Well, we got a lot planned out for it, too, so it's really going
to
be a good show.
You know what you should do? You should bring, like, the CD, which I'm sure you have access to, and maybe play a clip, you know.
Well, right now it's out getting mastered. So.
Wow.
No, I don't have it.
No, well, whenever you get that, play a little bit of clips every now and then. We can do that for the intro music leading up to it.
There we go.
Try to entice people to come in.
Entice.
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 Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Okay.
Can we get... Oh,
does Bill DeFabio know how much we... I don't want to say we mock him because we like him, but...
I don't want to say that...
Sample him.
I don't want to say that we mock him, but he doesn't listen. So,
so who cares?
But some of our listeners might call in later and be like,
he's at home right now, though. Earlier, if I'm going to listen to those Whisper Boys. Yeah. And then we mock him. We're in trouble. That's him on the phone right now.
Yeah, Lola's got him on the phone.
So what's our excuse?
Well, Nick did it.
Yeah, there we go.
Is that not a
phone call?
Are
we in trouble?
No, that was... I have another... Well, not another missing cat. The os split again.
The what?
The same
my
one.
My os. My cat. My baby.
Oh, Lola lost her os.
Yeah. I could have said something else, but I don't know.
That's what
have
I was thinking she was saying. She was just doing it like British. Like,
no, that's his name. Ossie. O-S-S-I.
Oh, I'm sorry. I have a gutter mind.
But
today.
Yeah, that was Barb, and she works at the Ohio County Animal Shelter, so she wants me to bring a picture in, and then they'll take it in there, and that way if he ever gets turned in, they've got the picture, and they can call me, and I can go wring his little neck.
Hmm.
I don't know where he's at this time.
Well, see, it's a cat, though. So, really, I mean, all you got to do is kill it.
Kill it?
I don't like cats.
Wow.
I am, like, speechless on this one, Nick.
I don't like cats.
This is my baby.
I was just...
Really? Yeah.
Well, it doesn't like you too much if it keeps running away.
All of her cats run away.
Got him. I think somebody took him, and I'm not discussing it anymore with you.
We're going to get a cat.
You're called an insensitive people, and
what?
I simply don't.
No,
care.
I was actually going to suggest
Lola,
we bring in
Lola.
Sorry.
Lola, I was joking.
You mock
I
my
was,
kitty.
I was joking.
Is. Forget it.
I was going to suggest we bring an animal whisperer or something on the show.
I've already thought of that.
And we bring him in, and then you bring your. But that would be the weirdest show, you know. Arf, arf. He says he's afraid.
He says, don't let Jordan near him.
Oh,
first of all, we're talking about a cat. Cats don't bark.
Well, Nick doesn't. He shouldn't be allowed out without a helmet.
You have a dog.
We've already discussed this.
But it's a
girl. I'd say bring all of them in.
Now, you want a zoo?
Yeah.
I'll tell you, though, what a difference one gone makes.
Really? Why?
I don't know. It's just I walk out in the kitchen when it's feeding time, and it just doesn't seem like the zoo frenzy that always was there when I had four, now that I only have three. It's just weird.
How big of a cat is this?
He's about 15 pounds. I mean, he's not a real big cat.
Yeah.
He's just a Tom, you know. And then I've got Lucy Lou, and I've got Tigger.
Two.
My sister's got Pumpkin. And then I've got Gretchen. Pumpkin's weird.
Pumpkin?
She's a strange animal.
Anywho.
But, yeah.
Yeah, so Nick, you started a new job. How you liking it?
I'm liking it so far. It's a little stressful, but, you know, got to pay the bills somehow, some way.
I actually, I just got hired today at a Walmart distribution center out in Wintersville. Right?
Did you tell them about your back?
And it's funny because that whole job is lifting. And
I've been thinking. I was going to ask you, but I didn't want to bring that up on the air because I didn't want you to go over there. Oh, well.
I kind of gave them a heads up and told them that I was a cripple. And they're like, "Are you going to be able to do the job?" I was like, "Of course I can. Have you met me? I'm amazing." And they're like, "Deal."
He's like, "Wait a second, let me get
this
the other
some,
phone."
Like, false advertising, oh. I think. However,
all right, Nikki, you want to introduce our guest?
Yes.
I can do that, I guess. I don't want you to do any heavy lifting over there tonight. All right.
Yeah, it tax his brain, it's drug.
Yeah, I'm on Vicodin, people. I can't think too hard.
Oh, this show might go downhill, just so you know. All right, Kevin Randall is a retired lieutenant colonel. He's been investigating UFO sightings for more than 30 years. He's written dozens of books and magazine articles on the subject and has lectured throughout the U.S. and Europe. Considered an expert by those inside and outside the UFO field, his opinions and assistance have been sought by government officials, members of the news media, and other UFOs. We're going to be talking about his latest book, Crash, When UFOs Fall from the Sky. Kevin, you with us?
I'm here.
How's everything tonight?
I'm just wondering why they said the show was now going to go downhill.
Oh, no.
Because the doctor is pumping me full of heavy narcotics.
I'm sorry. That was because of him. I'm sorry. I didn't know if you heard that or not.
Yes, I did, and it concerned me greatly.
I'm sorry. No, I'm talking about Jordan, not you.
Oh,
we're just going to turn his mic off later, so
sorry
about that. I just realized that could have been taken two ways.
I'm so relieved.
Okay. I'm sorry. They don't usually let me out of the house, so.
I understand that.
Yeah, he's like, I see why now.
Yeah. All right, Kevin, tell us about your new book.
It deals with UFO crashes, hence the title, Crash When UFOs Fall from the Sky. Excuse me. You've got me all choked up now.
I was going to say, you need a minute to compose yourself.
No, I need some of those drugs you were talking about.
There we go. Come on down.
As long as they're legally prescribed.
Well, to me.
Anyway, it's about UFO crashes. Starts with some events in 840 AD in France. And moves up to an event that took place in July of 2009 in Ottawa, Canada. So it's a wide range of stuff. What I was looking at was these, if you go on the internet and you look up UFO crashes, there's some of these lists of top 300 events. And I'm thinking, geez, if 300 UFOs crashed, we'd be having a lot different conversation because the evidence would be all over the place. So clearly there's events that are listed that are hoaxes. There are some single witness stories, things like that. But I try to look at everything and bring the best information forward on all the crashes, whether it's the Roswell UFO crash, which everybody's heard about, or some of the very obscure things that almost no one has heard about, like the crash in Needles, California in 2008 that George Knapp, who periodically host Coast to Coast,
yeah,
told me about. So
a
wide range of stuff.
And a lot of people really, you think of UFO crash, Roswell. You know, other than that, you know, they're really good pilots. But, I mean, how good of a pilot, you know, are these? If you got 300 crashes, that's quite a bit over, you know, the course of, you know, however long they've been, you know, documenting these.
You could also point out that maybe, like here, they buy their stuff from the lowest bidder.
Yeah, it could be. Well, you'd think they'd have a little better practice, you know, coming all the way over here from, you know, wherever they are.
Their offices must be in West Virginia.
Now, funny you should bring that up, because there was a big event in West Virginia in 1952, which I don't think of as a crash, but more of a landing, and I really don't talk about it in the book that much, but there was an event in September of 1952 that takes place in West Virginia.
Yeah, it actually happens around this area that we're in.
Oh, there you go.
Up in Oglesby Park.
There you go.
Was that one, and then also, are you talking about the Flatwoods one? Or?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Right after Flatwoods, there was a UFO sighting, or they say it was a crash out here in Oglesby Park.
Yeah,
in,
crash
Wheeling.
Landing kind of landed and took off again.
Well, there's a lot of those kinds of stories. There's one from Canada, Shag Harbor, Canada, in 1967, which may be the best documented UFO crash we have because of all the government documents that Chris Stiles and Don Ledger were able to find about it. But here was an object that was seen in the air, photographed in the air, crashed into Shag Harbor. There were divers who went down looking for the thing. The Canadian military is involved. American military was involved. Maybe the Soviets were involved. And so we have this event, but it appears that the object eventually, like 6 or 7 days later, was able to get out of the area. So that would be more of a crash landing, I think, than an actual crash.
Now, I'm not too familiar with that. Can you kind of give some background to the Shag Harbor case?
In October of 1967, started out with a group of teenagers seeing something in the sky. They reported it to the Royal Canadian Mounted Police. They went out and looked for it. They saw it in the sky. So, as they say, Chris Stiles and Don Ledger have been investigating it. They found a guy who'd actually photographed it in the sky. Now,
wow.
It's not a very distinct object. It's a blob of light. It was taken at night. There's a little bit of a indistinct nature to it. But you've got a picture of the thing in the sky. It hit the water. A number of fishing boats were called out to try to see if they could lend assistance because they weren't sure exactly what it was. Six divers, I think, eventually went down, and Stiles and Ledger were able to interview two of them. Canadian government was involved in trying to find out what exactly had crashed and what was going on, invited the Americans up to help them. a look around. And so there's documentation about this thing that took place. Started early in the morning, like just after midnight, and by dawn there was an awful lot of activity, meaning fishing boats and things around looking for it. And the object eventually disappeared from various sensor apparatus. So it lasted about, the whole thing lasted about 6 days.
Hmm. Now, and there is no report. I mean, is there any official report at all, you know, in the Canadian government?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Stiles and Ledger found any number of official government documents. And that's why I say it's probably the best documented case. Roswell, we've got lots of good eyewitnesses, and we've got a lot of testimony, but we have very limited documentation. But with Shag Harbor, we've got lots of the kind of documentation, government documentation, we wish we had for Roswell.
Well, like, what, I mean, does it, you know, when you look at some of this stuff and it's, you can kind of, it can go this way, you know, oh, it can be a plane or it can be, you know, a UFO. I mean, is it coming right out and say it was an unidentified flying object?
Some of the documentation certainly does, yes.
Oh, really?
Yes, wow. Yes. And there's various letters from Canadian officials talking about it. Stiles also mentioned that there was something called the Stoker Report, which is a logbook-like thing that they keep in, I guess, lighthouses. And those are supposed to be a matter of public record. And the one that he wanted that would have covered the time when this event happened had mysteriously been checked out by somebody and had not been returned. They eventually got a copy of it, but so there are those kind of references to the Shag Harbor case in Canadian government documentation that Stiles and Ledger have found.
Okay, now, and I think you said something about this, but I want to make sure I'm clear. Did they ever actually recover any debris or anything at all?
No, they did not. They did not get down deep enough to recover anything from it, and after about 6 days, apparently it left the area.
Oh, really?
Wow.
Yes.
So it crashed and they went through the debris of it. It still, did it fly away?
They didn't get to the debris. What was left on the surface was a yellowish foam, like you might see if an airplane went into the water intact. You would get the various liquids, the gasoline, the oil, the hydraulic fluid that would leak from the aircraft and bubble to the surface, so you get an oil slick, in essence, on the surface. And what they got was there was a sort of I don't want to say glow, but a yellowish glow, I guess, for the lack of a better term, on the surface of the water that gradually faded away. So there was that sort of thing seen on the surface, and the divers went down trying to get close to it and were unable to do so.
Wow. You said it disappeared. I mean, did anybody witness it flying away, or...?
It became clear it was no longer down at the bottom of Shag Harbor.
So you think maybe the government?
No, I think a little swipe. No, I don't think the government, either Canadian or American, had anything to do with it disappearing. I think the alien creatures were able to
recover
the crash or repair the craft and got out of there.
Now,
I think that's what happened in that one.
And we've actually and that, you know, goes into another portion of this. I guess we've been speaking with Frank Fascino a lot, and I've actually been thinking about having him come back on because he's always someone, you know, fascinating to talk about something that's local to here, and, you know, and it's also a crash, and that was the Flatwoods Monster case, and goes into, you know, the different crashes that happened there. And what he talked about was here at Ogilby was that the craft that left Flatwoods was damaged, and it had crash landed and allowed one of its passengers out. And there's actually documented, you know, in the newspaper here,
yeah,
that, you know, that there was an alien in this area and then it disappeared. They said it was a burned lady that they recovered, you know, no, of course, documentation about who she was or anything, but it was, there was a lot of UFO sightings that night where the recovery of this being, you know, he said it was, you know, kind of reminiscent of kind of a net coming down,
yeah,
for them looking for, you know, searching for this, this missing being.
Well, and the pictures I've seen, and there's illustrations as opposed to photographs, always reminded me of the Ace of Spades for some reason. The cowl on the back of the creature or whatever kind of looks like the shape of the Ace of Spades.
Yeah. I mean, now, is there any other, you know, stories, you know, that, or documented events about, you know, recoveries?
There's lots of those. There's lots of those. Roswell, of course, is recovered.
Uh-huh.
And there's stories of the alien creatures, what they look like. A number of stories from very credible people talking
now,
about.
Is that recovery? When I say recovery, I get, you know, not from the government, but by the aliens themselves.
Oh no. I don't. The Roswell case has always kind of bothered me because you would think that if you crash something like that, you would want to get it back. But it doesn't seem that there was any attempt to do that. Although, I think Lewis Rickett, who was the NCOIC, which is the non-commissioned officer in charge, the highest-ranking sergeant in the counterintelligence office, said that there had been a number of reports around the Roswell area after the crash, where they people were reporting an object playing a beam down on the surface of the Earth, as if they were looking for something.
Huh.
But the best information is, of course, that the U.S. government recovered it before the aliens got there to do it.
Now, do you lend any credibility then to, you know, people that say that after we recovered the the craft, that, you know, we started kind of a back and forth between us and the aliens?
No, I haven't seen good information or credible information about that. I've heard some of those stories, including the one from Holloman Air Force Base in 1964. I hope that wasn't me buzzing.
No,
no, I
us.
Think that was us by mistake. Sorry about that.
That's something we like to do. No, I'm just...
But there was this discussion of a landing in Holloman Air Force Base in 1964 that was supposedly set up between the aliens and the U.S. government, where they returned the bodies of the aliens who were killed at Roswell.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't find that credible. There's also the story that Eisenhower, out in California, about the in the 1950s, in 1954, something like that, sneaked away from the reporters and everything to see the remnants of a crashed craft. And I just don't find those stories credible. I would like more information. I'd like some better authorities talking about those sorts of things. So there are those stories circulating around. And I know that Len Stringfield had found some things like that as well. But and Len is, of course, Len Stringfield is the guy who kind of got us all talking about UFO crashes back in 1978 when he presented his paper at the MUFON conference in Ohio about crash retrievals.
Okay. Now, and you seem to always, you know, you talk a lot about Roswell. I know when I was going, putting up our show notes for today's show, and I was going through your books on Amazon, I mean, you had a ton of books. I actually put I picked out some of the better ones that I thought people would like, you know, that listen to the show. And, you know, other than that, you know, I'm sure they'll find your other book because you had a ton of them. But a lot of them also were, you know, centered around Roswell. I mean, and that's, I guess, whenever you think UFO crash, that's almost synonymous.
Yeah.
Why do you, keep going back, I guess, to Roswell as a subject matter?
Because we have the best witness testimony from that. We have the most information about it. There are other crashes we got a lot of information out. Kecksburg in 1965, Stan Gordon has put together quite an investigation of that event. There's the Las Vegas crash from 1962 that's covered in the Project Blue Book files, as a matter of fact. But with Roswell, because of an event that took place in 1947, Walter Hott, who is a public affairs officer, created a yearbook that gave us the names of practically everybody who was in Roswell in July of 1947.
Wow.
So we could find a lot of witnesses that way. I at one point was going through the MP section of the yearbook and cross-checking it against computer phone books, looking for the names and addresses of guys that we could contact about the event. So we're out there looking for the witnesses as opposed to them coming forward. But there's also some very, very interesting witness or civilian witness testimony about that, including from Frankie Rowe, who talks about her father, who was a firefighter in July of 1947. And it's absolutely true. You go to the Roswell Fire Department, you can find records with her father's name all over them. And he was there as a lieutenant in the fire department in 1947. And there's quite a controversy about her story because there's no record in the fire department that they made a run outside the city limits and all of this stuff. Well, what we found out eventually, we found one of the firefighters who was there in 1947. And I asked him about Dan Dwyer, Frankie Rowe's father. And he said that he knew Dan and that he had gone out on the on his own. The Air Force had sent to the fire department somebody saying, you don't need to worry about that. We've got it covered. You don't need to go out there. And so rather than the Roswell Fire Department going out there, they made a run. Or Dan Dwyer took his personal car and went out there, and he saw the craft, and he saw the bodies, and he came home and told the family about it. And he eventually told this other firefighter about it as well. So we had, you know, that kind of information going on. We have the witnesses telling the story, and we have corroboration of that story from other people. And we know if the event took place. I mean, everybody agrees something crashed at Roswell. It's just the interpretation of what that was.
Yeah, and it's do you think, I mean, what do you think happened exactly at Roswell? Do you think it was, you know, the crash of a craft, or
absolutely some,
okay? And a lot of people, you know, they research it, but they, you know, come to different conclusions.
Well,
wanted to make sure.
The problem we have with Roswell is that the Air Force decided in the mid 1990s that they were going to look at this again, which tells me we were getting too close to the answers.
Uh-huh.
And they had to do something to divert it, and they come up with this cockamamie Project Mogul answer. So we look at the story, and in 1947, the Air Force says, well, we found a flying saucer, and a few hours later, they said, well, no, the guys at Roswell were wrong. It wasn't a flying saucer. It was a weather balloon. The Air Force looks at the information back in 1995, researches this all over, and says, you know, it wasn't a weather balloon that they found. It was a weather balloon.
Oh, of course. That's the way it always is.
Yeah, that alone by itself is one of those things like, really? That's the best you could come up with?
All right, Kevin, if you can't hold on, we need to take our bottom of the hour break.
I'm there.
All right, you're listening to Whispers Radio on AM 1600 WKKX, the Valley's Watchdog. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Whispers Radio here on AM 1600 WKKX, the Valley's Watchdog, and UPRN, the UFO Paranormal Radio Network. I'm Jordan Klein, he's Nick Queen, and she is the lovely Lola Miller.
Oh, yes, and Kevin, did you pick up anything that we were talking about on the break?
The commercials were very loud.
Oh,
and
sorry.
Drowned out with everything you were saying. So no, the answer would be no.
Okay, all right. That's okay.
We
weren't talking about you.
Now you say that.
We were getting a little political, and we're told we're not allowed to do that on this show. Kevin, we were talking about crash sites. Now, how long have you been really getting into this?
I would say since 1988. And that happened at a science fiction convention, believe it or not. There was going to be a couple of guys from the Center for UFO Studies, and they were going to debate some science fiction writers about UFOs. And I was going to be one of the science fiction writers they were going to debate. And when the people from the Center for UFO Studies showed up, there was only one of them. And I didn't think that was fair that three science fiction writers beat up on the poor guy by himself. So I said I'd switch sides because it's a debate, not an investigation, and you're supposed to be able to do that. And as we got to talking, he and I got to talking, Don Schmidt and I got to talking, they were the center was going to launch a new investigation into the Roswell case because there was a lot of stuff to be done. And they thought with my military background that I would understand the mindset of witnesses who were retired military officers and that sort of thing. So I was invited to participate in their investigation. And I went into the thing fully believing that we would find out it was a weather balloon or some other nonsense, and got down there, and everything that I thought had been pretty well borne out until we met with Bill Brazel, who was the son of the man that found it. And at that point, I realized that there was something much more interesting going on in Roswell than just the weather balloon nonsense. There was a good story there, and as we continued to investigate and talk to the witnesses who were involved in the event, we learned we learned exactly what was going on, and I became convinced that it was extraterrestrial. So from about 1988 on, I've been working on UFO crashes and talking about that sort of thing.
Well, you know, I can understand with your background, you would be able to spot people that were trying to really just tell a story, you know, because you would have, I don't know, more information or just more knowledge about the physics of things, you know. I'm not saying it well, but...
Well, and I would agree to you, but I think the history has proven that point wrong, because there were a number of people who told stories, like Frank Kaufman, who I believed in the beginning. His picture was in the yearbook, so clearly he was in Roswell in 1947, and some of the people said, well, you need to talk to Frank Kaufman. And eventually we found out that Kaufman was making up the story. He was making up his role in the story. And so we had to eliminate that from the mix. So we've been kind of fooled by people somewhat, but now as we've moved 20 years into the investigation, and we've had an opportunity to talk to a lot of people and review the documentation, I think we're a little bit better in ferreting out those who aren't telling the truth.
I would think it'd be kind of hard, though, to do it. I mean, some people can really convince themselves of a story, and if told enough times, you know, I think you can convince yourself that...
Yeah, absolutely. No question about it. But I think the difference is that we're so... We now have an awful lot of the facts, and if the story diverts too far from the facts, then we're kind of clued, well, this really isn't the Roswell story. There's something wrong here. Red flags go up, and you say, well, we've got to take another look at this person. And we found some one guy came forward and said that his father had been flown in from Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, Wright Field at the time, and had taken him out to the crash site, and by his description of the crash site and whatnot, we knew that he hadn't been out there. He was making it up. And I really had a hard time believing that a high-ranking officer, and they probably did bring some in, but a high-ranking officer would be brought into Roswell. His divorced wife and his son would be living in Roswell, and he'd take his son out to this highly classified area that is cordoned off by the military police, and even if he'd wanted to take his son out there, that the military police would have let him through. So, I mean, that's the kind of a story that just did not wash with the information that we had.
Now, what kind of things do you go through to determine what the truth is? I mean, it sometimes it doesn't seem it's, you know, as cut and dry as, you know, just a lot of people just look at the documents and say, hey, you know, this is what it's really talking about. I mean, what's a red flag? If I'm looking at something, what would be a red flag?
Frank Kaufman, to use a perfect example, provided us with a letter supposedly written by Edwin Easley. Edwin Easley was the provost marshal in Roswell in 1947. He was clearly there. Frank Kaufman had a copy of a letter that Easley supposedly wrote. Mm-hmm. And in it talks about this being an extraterrestrial event or an interplanetary event, as they talked about it then. But as we looked at the office symbols, that where the letter was going, the military office symbols, and we discovered that some of those offices didn't exist in 1947. So this tells us, you know, there is an anachronism here. How could they be sending a letter? How could he write a letter dated this, sent to an office that did not yet exist? That would be a red flag. You've got to say, well, there's a real problem with that.
Yeah, who would be behind something like that? You know,
this was Frank Kaufman doing that as a way of kind of underscoring the validity of what he was telling us.
Okay,
and that was one of the things that kind of tripped him up, as we found that, you know, this really doesn't make sense here. What we eventually found out, that some of the things he told us, he said he'd been a master sergeant when he retired from the military, or got out of the military at the end of the Second World War. And we eventually got the documents for him from the military, and discovered he'd been a staff sergeant. Well, why would you lie about something like that? But he did. And he claimed to have training in intelligence work, but there was nothing in his records to reflect that. And it's kind of reminiscent of a case from Del Rio, Texas started out in 1948 and then became 1950 and eventually became the mid 1950s. But the fellow who was telling the story, as the date changed, that would be a red flag. Why couldn't he get the date pinned down right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I can understand you may not get it quite right, and especially if it's an event that happened 30 or 40 years earlier, but why wouldn't you, why would you keep changing the dates? And I assumed, as others did, that somebody else had checked his background, because he claimed to have been a colonel, retired Air Force colonel. I thought, well, I'm, you know, I believe the story because he's a retired Air Force officer. He wouldn't be making this thing up. But no, apparently nobody had bothered to try to check his records. When I got a hold of him, I found out he'd been a very low-ranking enlisted man in the Army, and there's absolutely no evidence that he was an Air Force officer. He was, in fact, a Civil Air Patrol officer, and I mean, the Civil Air Patrol does great things, and they're a very vital component of search and rescue missions, but the problem is it's not the same as being a retired Air Force officer.
Yeah. I mean, do you run into this a lot, you know, researching these cases? You know,
unfortunately, more than I care to.
Yeah.
And there's an awful lot of people who will magnify their military career, and then they'll say, well, I was involved in crash retrieval operations, and because it was so secret, you see nothing in the record to support that. And my response to that is, there would be indications there, special schools you might have gone to, and it wouldn't say, well, you went to the alien retrieval school, but there would be some kind of mention of something that would help you learn what you needed to know. And too often they'll say, well, my records burned up in St. Louis because there was a big fire in St. Louis in 1973. And one of the red flags now is if a guy claims, well, you can't get my records, it's because they burned up in St. Louis. And we who are really retired officers know well that A, if the records may not have been there in 1973 if the guy hadn't retired yet. B, there's all kinds of additional sources. For example, with the Air Force, there's the Air Reserve Personnel Center in Denver. And so even if your records had burned up in St. Louis in 1973, there are records in Denver that didn't burn up.
Hmm.
And so there's ways to look these things up and get additional information. The guy that I was telling you about who claimed to have in the Del Rio crash claimed that he had gone to flight school. And so I asked him, where'd you go to flight school? And he said he went in San Antonio, where there are three fields in San Antonio that they did flight training at the time he supposedly went through. So I talked to the historians at all three fields,
uh-huh.
And they went through the records, and they couldn't find the guy's name.
So do you think this is more elaborate cover-up, I guess, than...
No, I think...
You're like, really not into, like, any kind of conspiracy thing, are you?
No, there was a cover-up, but you have to separate, like, the Roswell case, where we've got some very good information,
uh-huh.
And it's quite clear that they covered things up, with stories being told by a single witness who wasn't the military officer he claimed to have been, and changes the dates, and changes the aircraft he was flying, and changes the circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
I eventually found the original 1968 story, when the guy first told his report, and compared it with what he was saying in 1977 and what he was saying in 1998, and it did not match at all. It's a completely different story. That is a single guy telling a story. I don't know why he began telling the story, but mm-hmm. eventually he got locked into the story and started telling everybody about it. And I think that's what he did, as opposed to at Roswell, where clearly Edwin Easley, the provost marshal again, told me that he had been sworn to secrecy.
Yeah.
We talked to people who said they were told they can't talk about it. They were not allowed to talk about it. So we can show the cover-up in some of the cases, but in other cases, I don't think there's a conspiracy to hide the information. It's just we've got a single guy telling a story for whatever reason, and we need to move those from the real cases so we can concentrate on the important information.
Maybe just somebody trying to make a name for himself.
Or get I think this guy's like 84 years old, and his family lives in Pennsylvania, as a matter of fact. He
mm-hmm.
lives in Texas. I don't think he knows a lot of people there, or the people he knows have slowly died off, so he's kind of lonely. Now he's got UFO investigators showing up to talk to him, so it's one of those kind of things. It's a way of getting people to talk to him.
Yeah,
it's kind of a bad situation. But,
yeah, you know. I was gonna say it's kind of hard. You know, you got a person that's kind of fraud, but you know, it's kind of sad.
Well, but the other thing is there's the Stolen Valor Act of 2005.
Uh-huh.
So he's claiming to be a high-ranking military officer, and he's wearing a uniform with military medals on it. So he's actually committing a crime.
Wow.
But I don't want to turn the guy into the FBI either.
Yeah, because he's not, also at the same time, he's not really, other than, you know, the UFO thing, he's not gaining money. I mean, you know, a lot of people, these people that get caught under this are
he applied for a pension, and I've seen some of the documentation, but it's clearly forged. And but I mean, the guy's 84 years old. His wife died 20 years ago. I mean, I kind of feel sorry for the guy.
Yeah.
But you know, so I hesitate to go much beyond saying, well, this case is not reliable. We need to, you know, let's go on to something that is more reliable, such as Roswell, such as Shag Harbor,
yeah,
such as Kecksburg. You know, look at those cases and see where we can go with those.
You know, I wish we'd gotten into some of like the Kecksburg and the Las Vegas case. We're starting to run out of time, so I do want to ask you this though. You know, a lot of people we talk to on here, you know, they're looking for disclosure. You know, they want the government, you know, any government at this point, I think they would take any government around the world to come forward and say, okay, yes, UFOs are real. You know, we've had this contact with them. This is what we've been studying. Do you see any government at all around the world ever coming forward and saying this?
There has been levels of disclosure.
Uh-huh.
The Air Force released the Project Blue Book files in 1976.
Yeah, but
there's some interesting stuff in there. So that's a partial disclosure. The French did their report several years ago that provided some of that disclosure. The British just in the last couple of years released a whole bunch of their classified documents, but none of them are saying alien spacecraft are visiting. It's, you know, here's what we have in our files, but it's not necessarily everything they have in their files.
I guess it's a level past disclosure, which would be acknowledgement.
Yeah, and I don't see that. I don't see that happening. I think the disclosure is going to come when the aliens land and say, here we are, and there's no way to hide it anymore, that it's on Fox News, and it's on MSNBC, and it's on ABC, and it's on CBS, and
I'm kind of with you there.
Talking to them.
Now, Kevin, mm-hmm. We got a question. Hold on.
Yeah, Barb called, and she said she was going through the news today online, and she ran across a story that said, there was a UFO sighting in China on July 9th, and it closed down a major airport. Do you know anything about
that? Yeah, that's been circulating for the last couple of days, and there's pictures.
Really?
And in fact, on my blog, there's a video bar that circulates videos on UFOs run by YouTube. And those pictures have actually shown up on my video blog, the video bar, a couple of times. There's some discussion of whether it's legitimate or not because it's in China, and so we can't get there to investigate. But we've had similar things happen like that in the United States, the Washington National sightings from 1952, which is all around the September 1952 Flatwood sighting as well. But I mean, here's the things over the airports. The pilots are seeing them. They're on the radar. They're being intercepted by fighters and that sort of thing. So those sorts of things have gone on periodically throughout the world. Tehran, in the mid 1970s, there was a big intercept over their airport. So, you know, that's gone on before. So we just don't have enough information to make a good call on the Chinese sighting yet. We're waiting for more information on it.
There's a lot of people I talked to, you know, to segue back to what we were talking about. They think that China will be the first one to come out, disclose all their stuff, and acknowledge what's happening, just so that they can almost position themselves as
the leader in this,
and as the superpower under, you know, with this you know, I guess, feather in their hat.
Yeah, we've had a few guests, UFO experts, that would come out and say that on our show.
Yeah, have you heard any? What is your opinion, I guess, on that?
I think disclosure is going to be run by the aliens. I think it's going to happen when the aliens decide.
Oh, you mean just like a landing on the White House lawn, more or less?
Or the in the Lafayette Park across the street, like it did in The Day You Stood Still with Michael Rennie. But,
oh, there we go. Hopefully Keanu Reeves does not come out of the craft.
Oh, yeah, that was not a very good movie.
Oh,
I was
it was
very
not.
Disappointed
it was not.
In that one.
I know, but I thought I had so much potential, but should have knew better of Keanu in there. So
he does do Shakespeare reasonably well.
Oh,
passably, yeah.
Well, and I liked him in The Replacements, but I don't know why they remade it, and B, I don't know why they remade it so poorly.
And you're a science fiction author too, correct? So I mean, you have a kind of a dog in this fight. I mean, not your favorite science fiction story. at least under his, with him as the, at the helm.
Well, yeah, I mean, I really kind of prefer some of the old 1950s science fiction to what they do today, although District 9 was kind of interesting.
I did like that one. So what, I mean, what's your, just to kind of go into this, because we only have a couple of minutes, what's your favorite science fiction story, if you want to throw one out there?
Well, the science fiction story would be Who Goes There by John Campbell, which he wrote in 1938. I defy anybody to read it late at night by yourself and not get scared, but it was made into The Thing.
Okay.
Okay.
From Another World, which was the 1950 version, was different than the 1982 version. The 1982 version got too hung up on the special effects, but it was more closely mirrored the story than the 1950s version. So that was kind of, but the 1950s one is kind of fun when you watch it, and I like Forbidden Planet really well.
Yeah, I threw story out there that way I can get anything, like, you know, short story, novel, whatever. So
Kevin, we are out of time. We have to leave.
You're gonna throw me off the air.
I'm sorry. we have to break at 7 o'clock hard for the news.
I do have to say, though, I lied. The show actually went up instead of down. So
you raised it.
You saved us.
I want to let you know, Kevin, we have all your book, well, a selection of your books.
I could
and,
get them all on
links.
The page.
On our page, whispersradio.com, so our listeners can get there and purchase one of your books.
And your blog's up there. I think it's Kevin...
Randall.blogspot.com.
There you go.
Kevin, thank you for being with us today. We really enjoyed it.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to do it.
Thanks,
have a good
Kevin.
Day.
Thank you.
Night.
Good night.
All right, we got any time for the break, or are we cutting?
You got about 10 seconds.
I like him. We should have him back.
Yeah, sounds good. Too.
All right.
All right, everybody, stay tuned for CNN News. We will be right back. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Whispers Radio here on AM 1600 WKKX, the Valley's Watchdog, and UPRN, the UFO Paranormal Radio Network. I'm Jordan Klein, he's Nick Queen, she is the lovely, lovely, lovely Lola Miller, who recently had her first experience. Give us a call, 304-214-1600. If you're out of the area, 1-866-514-1600, that's toll-free. The weather's about 76 degrees. It's still raining. Doesn't look like it's really raining anymore, though, does it?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, I can see it there in front of that tree.
It is raining.
And it's raining.
It is raining. Which is good. Our flowers needed the rain.
It could be worse. It could be a drought. That would be horrible. Drought with all this heat.
You know, want to know something funny?
What?
Okay. I'm on some pills.
Yeah.
And, I'm having some weird dreams.
Ah,
right?
Yeah.
And day before yesterday, I had a dream that, like, there's balloons, right? And you blow up these balloons and they turn into, like, balloon clowns that eat people.
Oh, God. That's not a dream. That's a nightmare.
So
would these be killer clowns from outer space?
No. Because I think that's what my brain was trying to reference. Because, like, one of them kind of looked like that. But, I mean, they were balloons. Anyway, last night... My entire dream was buying garden hoses.
Oh my!
Like I was like in like Lowe's or something shopping for a garden hose.
It wasn't like to fight like.
No, it wasn't anything cool. I mean, I was just buying a garden hose.
Maybe your mind's trying to tell you, Jordan, buy a garden hose.
Maybe deep down, like my deep down dream, you know, like Martin Luther, I had a dream that I was.
His was to end segregation and you know. Stop the
and
hatred.
Yours are that your plants are dying.
Your dream
plants
sucks.
Outside.
Well, maybe that's what it is. You would if you would buy a hose and water.
That's what's holding me back, Lola. That's why I haven't went to the next level in life.
Tonight, buy mutual funds, Jordan. It's kind of like that Futurama episode where they put dreams commercials into your dreams. Have you ever seen that one?
No.
Yeah, they're all having dreams. Like Fry has a dream where you know you buy underpants. So Jordan's there, and all of a sudden it's a commercial for hose, you know, lawn hoses.
It's just like going way quick.
Yeah. Well, Jordan, before we bring the guest on, and I had this for last week because I was hoping to drive you crazy. And now you're on drugs, and this might even be better.
This is not really giving him a sporting chance. You know
the article I have in my you know.
Sealed in a mayonnaise jar.
Sealed in a, yeah. It's from Cryptomundo, one of my favorite blogs I read every now and then. The article's title is, Should Bigfoot Be Killed to Prove They Exist? And the first sentence is, let's look at it from their point of view. Maybe they want to kill humans to prove we exist to their clans. The article goes on to talk about.
They really don't have to. All they got to do is wait for Dick Cheney to go hunting.
Now, he shoots humans as well.
That's what I mean. You know, the corpse.
We do know that
the
Dick Cheney does exist because he shoots people.
Oh, never mind, Nick. Sometimes it loses it when you have to really explain the whole thought process on a one-liner.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry.
I'm
a horrible person. What do I say? But, you know, and it does go into the same complaint that you and Jordan both have, though. Where the heck are all the bodies? You know, why isn't there bodies of either Bigfoots that have died or been hunted or whatever? Because there's a lot of hunters out there.
But to
and you know you're dead.
I just want to say, to compare it to, well, maybe they don't believe that humans exist, is the most ridiculous thing, the most ridiculous argument I think I've ever heard. Ever.
Okay, the guy's a humorist. The guy that wrote this, so.
Well, just, you don't trip over mountain lion bones or bear bones. I mean, things get dragged away.
Other
predators take them. The ground is acid, and it dissolves them.
But now,
isn't
over
that
the,
one excuse we heard?
Okay, but over, yeah. Yeah, but yeah. Over, okay, but from the time that they were in times to now, you would think that they would find one because, you know, I found some bones out before, you know, deer. I found some rabbits and some squirrels. You know, I know there's a lot more out there than just that one, but they're there. But what do y'all think? Do you, you know, just to not.
Maybe they just found a good waxer.
They maybe did.
Look at this dead hairy human. No.
Yeah.
That's why there's no dead Bigfoots.
So do y'all, do you
hunter,
think.
Hunter found, a estranged hunter found covered in hair.
So do you think they should be killed, though? I mean, if somebody had the opportunity.
If they existed.
Shoot it to wound.
No. Blow the thing into tiny little pieces.
He's wanting to kill cats,
Lola.
He doesn't care about Bigfoot.
Put all the pieces into a bag. Bring the bag back. Let's piece it together and see what makes what fit.
And then to go even further with this, he does mention also, you know, different cases. The Minnesota Iceman.
What? Huh?
I just see Jordan acting like he's drinking. The Minnesota Iceman, that was fake. All these different
prayer.
Yeah, all these different. We do not want to give him alcohol with his Vicodin. The last thing we need. He's got to drive home. He's got all, you know, all these different fakes that were, you know, especially the one that was down in Georgia. That was the mat, you know, the suit. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
So
we're gonna shoot the next Bigfoot we see, and it turns out to be a 6'5" goofball in a monkey suit.
Could be.
Oh, that's real. What jury's gonna believe that? I thought it was Bigfoot.
You know, in that case, shoot him anyway. Because, you know, I know I'm going to get hate mail for it, so I might as well just go out and say it.
Yeah, put it
you
out
know,
there.
If
put
you
know,
if you're
there.
Dumb enough to put on an ape suit and run around in the woods. You're dumb enough to get shot. I mean, unless you got the orange vest on, of course.
Well, now there's a thought. We should warn all the Bigfoots to start wearing Hunter's orange.
Yeah. And, okay, well, to close this out real quick, and then we'll bring on Herb Street.
Well, I better get him on.
Yeah, if you
want to
bring him out.
Yeah.
They do name three examples from history of, you know, these wilderness stories in
where
this article.
Where people shot Bigfoot?
Well, no, just of.
Oh, they aimed and missed.
Of Bigfoot killing humans, actually. So, I know, right? And Lola's over. Lola's lost it. All right. And here's the three. They're tales from the Nahanni Valley, Northwest Territory, Canada, the so-called Headless Valley of the supposed killings of prospectors by the Hairy Bushman, a local name for Sasquatch or surviving Neanderthals. The Yosemite Valley.
How do you confuse a Sasquatch and a surviving Neanderthal? Isn't the Sasquatch supposed to be huge and Neanderthal is like 3 foot tall?
And bulletproof. And then the... I don't know. The Yosemite.
You should have had Geico insurance, you know.
Yeah. The Yosemite Valley, which I didn't know this, and I thought maybe you'd find this interesting.
Okay.
It's named after a shadowy group of people that pursued the Indians that lived in the valley. The Miwok word Yosemite is tied to their characterizations of their elusive enemies, and it means some among them are killers. I didn't know that. Did you?
No. Yeah, I have to. Yes,
that's
that
pretty,
was. I've. But I'm still not convinced that a group of Bigfoot.
The big feet. It just reminds me of that.
Chasing a bunch of Native Americans around.
I don't know. I get this.
Tonka.
You remember Lord of the Rings, Fellowship of the Rings, where the Bigfoot, big feet. You know, sorry.
Okay.
And then the last one, and we'll go to Herb. Okay. The famed story from Theodore Roosevelt's The Wilderness Hunter, published in 1890. During the mid-1800s, two hunters, one named Bauman, were camping in the Bitterroot Mountains on the other side of the Rockies from Yosemite when they were visited by something that left giant footprints. At this midnight, they saw in the fire's light a huge upright form and smelled it too. Next morning, Bob went to check the traps. While his mate packed up, he returned, found his friend's neck broken and four great fang marks in his throat. And Roosevelt added, the footprints have been of the unknown beast printed deep in the soft soil, told the whole story. His monstrous assailant, which must have been lurking in the woods, waiting for a chance to catch one of the adventurers unprepared, came silently up from behind, walking with long, noiseless steps and seemingly still on two legs. Had not eaten the body, but apparently had romped and gamboled around it, uncouth and ferocious glee, occasionally rolling over and over, and then fled back into the soundless depths of the woods.
Yeah, it's called a big grizzly bear.
But that was one of our presidents that thought there was a Bigfoot.
He liked,
how's that, Jordan?
Which president?
Theodore Roosevelt.
Teddy.
Yeah. Well, he wanted to shoot everything.
He did shoot everything.
If there was a Bigfoot, Teddy would have shot him.
That's right.
There you go.
And I hold firm to that right there.
And you, I think you might have won me over. Good job.
Case closed. No Bigfoot.
Yay!
Nikki, introduce our guest.
Oh, okay. Let's see. Maybe Herb Street actually has shot a Bigfoot. Who knows? We'll have to ask him. All right. sorry.
Did you lose it? Herb Street. The Herb Street method.
Herb Street method.
Are you going to do it? Or are you going to
go
do
ahead.
It?
Go ahead.
Oh, you got. Hey, Herb. How are
you? How's it going,
ya?
Herb? The man who needs a more introduction, Herb Street.
Yes.
Hey, Herb. I've been on meds. I'm sorry.
That's his excuse tonight.
I'm going with that.
That's a pretty wild conversation you guys are having there.
Well, I always bring up.
Here.
You know, if you've listened to the show since the beginning, Jordan hates Bigfoot. You know, and I have to bring Bigfoot. You know, I bring Bigfoot guest on just to agonize him at this point because he hates it so much. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, you're breaking up really bad. You got maybe bad connection or something.
Do I sound better now?
Yeah, that sounds a little better.
So tell us, Herb, you went with us for the pen trip. What'd you think?
Oh, it was freaking phenomenal. I mean, I caught a ton of evidence there. I was trying to send it over so you could play it for the listeners. And for some godforsaken reason, my computer kept freezing, so I wasn't able to. But I'm gonna keep working on that while I'm talking to you, and hopefully I can shoot you a couple before the show's
over. We'll go on break here maybe in a little bit to give you a little extra time just in case, because I would like to hear some of this, even if you get a couple up, up to us.
Yeah, we probably captured, I would say, close to 50, 60 EVPs.
Wow.
That was just completely gnarly. We were up in the psychiatric ward.
Uh-huh.
At the end of the night, it was probably about 5:30. I was with three other people, some ladies that were there for the event. And I pressed record, and we're walking along, and we're asking questions. And I stop it, and I play it back. And as clear as day, you can hear a woman singing a song. And I'm like, at this point, I was wicked tired of silence. I don't know nothing. You know what I mean? Like, I asked the ladies, I'm like, were you guys singing? Because I didn't hear it. But, you know, when you're tired, you don't know what the heck's going on.
Uh-huh.
So I went back and I watched the video. And I'm telling you, man, and all that stuff's going to be up on YouTube real soon. I've been working on it. And there's nothing going on. And when I play it back, you hear this song. It's a woman singing. And it sounds really, really creepy, like something out of a horror movie. And it goes on for at least 20 seconds solid of this woman singing. And I can't make out what she's singing, but it's definitely a song.
Really?
Yeah, it was wild.
Now, I know you can't hear the words, but is it like a country song or kind of like a, you know, folklore, something like that, or, you know, a cappella?
It's not something that's modern. I mean, it sounds like it's just like maybe a lullaby even. I mean, it's just really weird and vibrato. I mean, it's like shaky.
And Jordan shook his head at me like, why are you asking? Yeah, I mean, you know, is it something that's been there for a long time?
I know you can't make it out, but was she singing a country song?
Well, you know what? There's country music is big here. And, you know, what if it was somebody that had been in there, you know, back in the 90s, 80s? You know?
To me, I mean, I'm not real familiar with country music.
Yeah, me neither.
I guess, but it sounded more like a lullaby, like something that they may have sang to try to get the... It makes to go to sleep. I have no idea.
Yeah.
Wow.
Now, you know, before we go, I'll go deep into evidence, what you found and stuff. I know before you came up, you really had, you'd seen pictures of the place. You were asking me, you know, how big is it? I was trying to give you, kind of an idea of it, but I'm horrible at size and all that. I mean, was it bigger than you thought, smaller than you thought, you know, just coming up at...
It was definitely massive. It was one of the biggest locations I've ever been to as far as square footage goes.
Uh-huh.
I would definitely say it's right up there with the most active. I mean, top five, no doubt, most active locations I've ever been to. The only thing that was unfortunate is that we didn't get to spend a whole lot of time because the tour took a little longer than expected.
You know, and a lot of times, you know, they do those tours because a lot of people there never been there. They don't know the history. And, you know, you've got to have some history behind it before you go, you know, I guess, you know, hunting ghosts. I mean, that's one of the, I guess, the cornerstones of hunting it, you know, I think at least, you know, knowing the history. So, yeah, they do a little bit.
Yeah, usually it only lasts about 90 minutes. It was a little long.
Yeah.
No, it was great, though. I mean, I would definitely come back 1,000 times. You know what I mean? It was phenomenal. I mean, the stuff that we caught there was just, it was unbelievable. And the people that were there with me, too, and if they're listening now, you know, anything you guys want, just contact me directly. My links are up on the Whispers Radio site, and I'll send you the audio files, and I'll send you links to the video on YouTube of everything that we did, because we caught a lot of stuff. I mean, it was incredible. Just when we were walking, doing the tour with the tour guide,
uh-huh.
I was picking up EVPs. I was getting K2 hits. The EMF levels were rising. The temperatures were going up and down. I mean, it was just like they wanted to make contact. And once we did get settled in there, I mean, it was wild.
Yeah. Now, I know Lola was having a lot of play on her K2 meter. And they were talking about something that happened in Red Cell, Red Snyder, which is over in the north. What's it called? North Hall?
Yeah.
Yeah, in North Hall. Are you familiar with where I'm talking about?
Yeah, I spent a lot of time over there. I was there for at least 40 minutes.
Now, and I can't remember exactly. Unfortunately, I didn't get to go with you guys. What exactly happened, Jordan?
When we were in there, we had about six people with us, and we all crammed into that little room around the K2, and we were getting nothing. We weren't getting anything. And then Lola just shouts out, she's like, listen, there's three girls here, you know, three guys, you know, I don't know what your preference is, but you should be happy we're all sitting, you know. Well, the K2 starts going off after that. And then, you know, we have the recorder going, so we decide, okay, we're going to try real-time analysis here. And play the tape over again. We didn't hear anything, but the K2 was responding to the same questions through the recorder.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
That's something that we find all the time. Like, it'll respond to that. Cause sometimes these spirits, they can't actually see you. They can only hear you. Like, this is something that you have to do field studies on. And I've seen this happen numerous times where the spirit cannot see you. They can only hear you. So when you're playing the audio back, they think you're asking them the same question, and they're going to respond to it.
Yeah, that's what I was kind of thinking it was doing.
I hadn't thought about that before. I mean, it's... We used to do something we were investigating where, you know, we would go in, we would, you know, set it up and record for an hour, and we, you know, where we said nothing, kind of to get like a base level of what's happening in the house, you know, just that way, you know, if we're getting a lot of voices while we're in there talking, we put nothing in there and they're getting about the same voices, you know, maybe there's something in there that's maybe residual, maybe there's something happening outside that, you know, we got to investigate if it's the same stuff or something. You know, have you ever done anything like that? I know you do the real-time analysis.
I have, and I do still, depending on how much time we have on the location. If you're doing something like that, you've got to spend a minimum of at least 10 hours in a location. You can't just set up for an hour. Like, if you got 4 hours on a site, you don't want to waste an hour of just recording, because you're not trying to interact. You're not introducing yourself. You're just trying to capture what these entities are going to say to each other while you're there.
Yeah.
And if you're dealing with a shy entity or spirit or whatever you want to call it, they're not going to say anything. You're going to have to, you know, like, basically catch lightning in a bottle and walk in at the right place at the right time and catch them talking, which does happen to investigators.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but, I mean, it is good for base readings if you have X amount of time in the location, like 10 hours or so, I would say.
So you're saying if you have 10 hours, do it. If you have 6, maybe not. You know,
yeah.
Something like that. Okay.
Yeah, and it's even if you had 10 hours in a place like the pen, that would be tough. I mean, we were talking last week. I think it was Lola said, you know, you'd really have to spend time in each individual cell, you know, just to see what kind of was going on, because it's not fair just to kind of walk the hallways and pick and choose a couple.
Oh, definitely. And like, a place like that would be prime location for, like, a paranormal school. Like, I was talking to you guys about how, you know, if the government got behind ghost hunting and funded it and stuff like that and took it as a genuine science, something like that could be studied daily. I mean, you put in security cameras, you put all these instruments in, and they're monitored by security. If you were to monitor that location every day, 24 hours for a solid year, could you imagine the evidence that you would capture there? It would be unbelievable.
Yeah, and Dwayne was actually mentioning, Dwayne Claude, which was with us as well. He noticed that they actually have cameras in there now, probably just for security reasons. And, you know, and he was saying, you know, I'd love to get access to those feeds.
Yeah.
You know, because they're infrared cameras. They're on probably 24/7, you know, just to see what the heck they see in there. And I've actually been thinking about calling to see, you know, hey, have you caught anything at all on those? That'd be interesting.
Well,
what
they do with something like that, because I know a lot about security. I got people that work in security and stuff.
Yeah.
They're not even going to look at that unless an incident takes place. Like, all that
yeah.
stuff just cataloged and erased after, like, a week's time.
Yep, that's how it works.
Which is sad.
Yeah,
I mean, you know.
If they're doing it up to date, it would be logged on a hard drive, and they do it for a week straight. If there's no incident, it's just erased. It's not logged because it's just clogs up hard drive.
Yep.
So,
you know, somebody there, though, somebody's there so they can, you know, we got all these ghosts here. You know, it's just something, you know.
You know, it would be cool, Herb, if they maybe uploaded all that information online and let people, you know, individual researchers, you know, go in and.
Heck, charge a little bit of money for people to have access to it.
Just check on the internet and watch it.
Yeah, they could do that as a website, in a fundraising for the, you know, $2 a month or something, and just stream it live so they don't have to save any of it. And then people just go on to Western Penitentiary or West Virginia Mountville Penitentiary, and you sit there and you're watching it. You know how many people would watch that? I mean, just to see what's going on there 24/7.
That is a good idea.
That is.
Yeah.
We have to call them and actually suggest that. I mean, if somebody out there is, you know, connected
to the pen, you know, call them up.
Jazeko, I mean, this is your chance to go get them.
Well, you could even do that next year when you do an event there again.
Uh-huh.
Ask them if they would let us do that to earn extra money for the pen or whatever.
Yeah, that's something to keep in mind. Well, if you don't mind, what we're going to do at 7:30, take a break a little bit. Yeah, how much time do you think you need maybe to try to see if you can get one up there or a couple uploaded to us?
All right, give me 5 minutes and then call me right back. Then.
All right, I'll give you a little bit more than that just in case.
All right, you're listening to Whispers Radio. Hopefully we're going to have some EVP from the Pen Hut right after this. Don't go anywhere. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Whispers Radio here on AM 1600 WKKX, the Valley's Watchdog, and UPRN, the UFO Paranormal Radio Network. 7:39, 76 degrees, and some rain here in downtown Wheeling. I'm Jordan Klein. He's Nick Queen. She is the lovely Lola Miller. I do want to apologize to the UPRN folks. We haven't been able to be on the chat room with them for the past couple weeks, but we're trying to get that worked out. Our guest tonight, Mr. Herb Street with the Herb Street Method. We're going to get some EVPs from the pen trip. Herb, you still with us?
Yep, I'm here.
All right, did you get everything worked out? Did you send them to Lowe?
I sent five of them to Lowe.
All right.
Nice. Now, while she gets those set up, I don't know how much time she'll need.
Yeah,
I lost my question.
I like when Nick says.
Okay, well,
talking.
We were asking. We were asking Dwayne. I know you stayed actually. I don't know how long did you stay at the hotel over at the Palace of Gold.
I slept for maybe 4 or 5 hours, then I took off.
Okay, how did you like it up there?
It was nice. I mean, it's a bed. It's a beautiful location. You know, if I had more time, I would have stuck around. I just didn't.
Yeah, I know Jordan or Dwayne came in the day before, so they got to go.
Yeah, we went on a whole tour, kind of the whole property. It was pretty neat.
Yeah, there's some history up there. But, you know, it's a nice area up there. It's really pretty. It doesn't even look like it's West Virginia when you get up there. It's just,
yeah. No, it's gorgeous.
Yeah, you just drive in and all of a sudden you feel like you're maybe you're in another world.
You're like, wait a minute. Talk about wrong turn. Where am I? Do we got it working, Lowe?
All right, great. All right, well.
Do you want to set one of these up for us?
Let's play it, and then I'll talk about it, because I get it so quick, I don't even remember what I gave you.
Okay. All right,
this one is titled, Be My Friend. All right, here it goes.
Do you know where you are?
Wow, so tell us about that.
Now, that one we caught, I believe we were stopped right by the gymnasium there, if you remember that part of the tour. And it was me, and there was probably about 8 or 9 other people standing around me. We got a couple K2 hits, and I go, hang on, let's wait a minute, let's see if we get a voice. Whipped out the voice recorder, asked that, and we got this, definitely a male, I would say an older gentleman, saying, I would like to befriend you, if you want to play that one more time. That's what I think it's saying, I would like to befriend you.
Do you know where you are?
Yeah, that's what it sounds like to me.
Now, when you get, you know, kind of to go into your process a little bit before we go to the next one, you know, I know when we bring our stuff, you know, and we put it on like Adobe Audition. Some people use Audacity. I think Jordan's got GarageBand over there on his Macintosh, you know, unholy Macintosh. You know, what exactly do you do when you, you know, clean it up, I guess, a little bit, make sure everything's clear when you, you know, present it, you know, kind of like you're doing now?
I don't do anything. I don't run through any editing software because that you got to throw it out because you're manipulating it.
Yeah.
I just leave it in its purest form. I take it from the audio device. I download it into the program that came with the digital recorder.
Uh-huh.
It doesn't do anything to manipulate it. And then I peel the attachment, throw it in an email, and that's how I present it. And when I'm playing it, when I do events and stuff, and when I'm doing my paranormal classes I teach, I just play them in its purest form. I mean, if you're doing it for a presentation, it's fine. If you want to boost the audio just to show people, that's fine. But when you're presenting something in evidence, you cannot manipulate it in any way, shape, or form. You got to show it for what it's worth.
You know, so I know a lot of people that run stuff through, like the noise removal stuff, you know, try to remove some of the background a little bit. Because, of course, you get a little bit of background, you can kind of hear a little bit there. So you don't do anything like that at all?
I don't like to use any of that stuff. I mean, I used to in the past, but, I mean, if you really have to do that much to depict what's being said, then you should throw it on anyways. I mean, if you can't hear it and it's not EVP, and you're just trying to make noise or words the noise, I mean, it's no good.
Gotcha. So you're kind of and going into, I don't know if you even use these or not, but, you know, like the Class A, Class B, and Class C EVPs, you know, you go into Class A, which is very, kind of like what you just heard, you know, it's very clear. You can kind of hear it. Might even be a Class B because you couldn't hear the whole thing, but I know for sure I heard the...
Right. No, I don't present anything less than a Class A, Class B EVP. I mean, for myself, sure, I'll listen to something, and if it's very faint, I'll say, okay, it's saying this. But it's hard to present that as evidence because if it's something that's so jumbled, that's so light, that you can barely hear it,
yeah,
you're going to get skeptics that are saying it's this
Yeah, sorry about the phone. I wasn't sure what happened there.
That wasn't us.
Oh, that wasn't us?
I told you.
Oh, something happened there? I'm sorry.
Oh, I don't know. I'm getting like 30 texts while I'm on the interview here. I apologize.
Oh, no, not a problem. Just want to make sure what's happening. All right, well, let's go ahead and go to the next EVP.
Okay.
Do you see a light?
You there, Herb?
Herb, are you there?
Yep, play that again. I didn't hear that.
Yeah,
one.
There's somebody's keep on trying to dial a phone. So, okay, ready?
Yep.
Do you see a light?
I didn't hear anything on that one.
And now, see, that one, it's very faint. It's in the distance, so I probably would throw that one out.
Okay.
Okay. Next one.
All right. This one is titled, I'm Trapped.
Are you trapped?
Now, see, with that one, you could hear two different people, or entities, mm-hmm. whatever you want to call it, answering the same question. To me, it sounds like there's a child in there, and then there's also that, like, deep, guttural voice that I can't really make out.
I heard the child really well. I guess not really well. I couldn't make out exactly what they were saying, but it sounded like a child.
Let's play it again.
Yeah, let's play that again.
Are you trapped?
Yeah, and the deeper voice is hard to make out, but you can hear the child distinctly at the beginning there.
Oh, definitely. To me, it almost sounds like it's saying, what? And then there's something else, but because that guttural voice is, like, right there, it's drowning out the child's voice.
Yeah. Now, the real quick, going to the one before that, I mean, so when you have something that's kind of faint, you know, how do you go through deciding what you want to throw out and what you want to keep? I mean, is it... something, I mean, would you try to, I guess, boost the audio a little bit on that at all, or no?
No, I mean, I would keep it for myself. I mean, anytime you manipulate anything, it's just going to become a personal experience, because once you manipulate it, forget about it.
When in doubt, leave it out.
Yeah. Yeah, but, I mean, would you try to, I guess, for your own personal, I don't want to say amusement, but enrichment, would you try to find out, you know, what it's saying by trying to boost it a little bit, or no?
Well, definitely. If I'm doing something and I want to learn for myself, then there's no problem doing that, because you're not out to prove nothing.
Sure, and I was just curious if you had tried that to try to see what they were saying.
Hey, Herb, I do got to ask, the one that we just listened to, where was that taken? Do you know?
Oh, geez. I think that one was actually in the Sugar Shack.
Okay. We actually got something in the Sugar Shack as well before.
Was there a question?
Well, on this, there was a light one. I'm going to do it again, because Barb said over the radio, she could hear it. So let's do that again.
Do you see a light?
I don't
know. You can hear it's very, 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 very faint. It's hard for me to
hear. I could definitely hear it. It sounds like a child, but it's like you guys say, it's super faint.
Yeah, it's like I could hear something maybe, but then at the same time, I'm like, you know, is that just maybe some static, you know, over the microphone or something? I can't tell for sure.
Yeah, so. Something like that. That's a personal experience.
Yeah.
It's too distant.
Okay, now here's the next one. You've got it titled Killer.
Ooh. Why do you want to kill her? Up so you can see everything.
Now, at the end there, that's me saying back up so you can see everything, because when I'm doing voice recordings, people, I make sure that you can see the investigator, the environment, everything. Now, keep in mind, when I caught that, nobody was talking. This was at a part of the night where the tour was done. There was no talking. All that speech that you hear should not have been captured because no one was saying anything.
Yeah, that was
so all that whole conversation you're hearing there is completely supernatural.
And that was actually pretty good. Can we play that one more time, Lola? Yeah. Thanks.
Why do you want to kill her? Back up so you can see everything.
And it even talks over you a little bit at the beginning. While you're talking, you can hear it talking over you.
Now, this was in the, I don't know what you would call it in a prison, a mess hall, a kitchen, whatever you want to call
the
it.
The cafeteria.
Yeah.
The cafeteria, right. We were all in the cafeteria, and I'm going to get this piece up on YouTube because we actually caught a full-body apparition while we caught this EVP. Now, right before we caught this EVP, we're all standing there. We're getting K2 hits. There were probably 12 people in the room.
And
in the window there, you know where the kitchen is, the actual kitchen, we were filming, so you could see a little IR glare. And in front of the window, you see a full-body black shadow person walk right across. No one's over there. I sent John and Christina into the cafeteria, the kitchen, whatever you want to call it, where they caught the kitchen, excuse me, and no one was in there.
Huh. And I know that's...
Right after we caught that, I go, okay, everyone come back here, be quiet. And we did that EVP, and it sounds like a room full of people talking, and it makes sense. In a cafeteria, that's what people did. They socialized.
Well, I know, and that's interesting because I know, and you probably saw the picture when you walked into the lobby there. The shadow person that someone took a picture of, I can't remember how long ago that was, they said.
This is a few years.
Yeah, it's been a while. But that's, you know, on the door, you know, the hall, like you walk from the lobby area and you walk towards the kitchen. You know, they had that door open there, and that's where they captured. They were standing in the hall, you know, facing the cafeteria entrance, and they caught the shadow there.
I didn't even know that's where they caught it, right around the corner.
They sometimes they don't tell you this. So that's, you know, that's I would like to see that. And I know we've been talking to people like crazy. When's Herb going to upload his stuff? You know, they're waiting with bated breath.
Oh, you know. It'll be up there within a week or two. It's just wicked. I've got hours and hours because we were filming two video cameras the whole time that we were there, and all the audio stuff, too, will be backed up on the website. You'll either find it on the MySpace, the Facebook, or you can email me directly. Anyone that's listening that's interested in this, I'm a very accessible person. Just write me an email. I'll be like, hey, can I take a listen to this?
And can you give your email real quick that you want them to email you at?
It's Herb, H-E-R-B, 224, man, at AOL.com.
All right, there you go. Herb, 224, man, at AOL.com. Do we have any more EVPs?
Yeah, there's one more.
One more.
This is just titled West Virginia Pen.
Are you alone?
All right, well, I'm not going to lie to you, Herb. That's creepy.
I think Nick just wet his pants, Herb.
I wasn't exactly expecting, I was expecting, you know, that was, can we play that again real quick?
Yeah.
All right. Well, real quick first.
Yeah, go set it up. I'm sorry.
Where was this at?
Now, this one we caught when we were walking, we were lost. We were looking for the psychiatric ward.
Okay.
And it was just four of us. I believe almost everyone was gone at this point or in the lobby. And we're walking around and we're looking for it, and we're like completely lost. And I don't even know where we were, but I think it was close to where the warden's house was because it was really nice and open. I think that's what it was. And,
it's easy to get lost in the prison, so don't feel bad about that.
keep in mind, too, folks, when I'm showing you these EVPs, we were sitting there for at least 20, 30 minutes, and there's full conversations that continue, these same voices answering different questions. So,
no,
I mean,
it's like on the video cameras and such.
Oh, yeah. And it's all backed up on YouTube. Like I said, everything that you're listening to now will be up on YouTube soon where you can see the video feed, see that no one was talking at the time, see who was in the room. And it's wild. You know, I love this stuff.
Yeah. And if you as soon as you upload, email me and I'll try to throw a link up as quick as I can. You know, I've been working and stuff, so I'm a little behind on everything. Just shoot me a link, or, you know, that way I'll know that it's up and I can load it up to our website. at least a link to the to your YouTube.
At the very latest, it'll be 2 weeks from now, because I know I have, oh God, I don't even know, maybe 20 hours worth of stuff to put up.
All right, let's listen. Let's do it again.
Are you alone?
And the thing about that one is that's weird. Like I think I hear at one point, shut the door, another point I'll tell you, but it's also a lot of mumbling.
Well, it sounds like two voices, a child saying something and then someone older saying something back.
And it might even be, you know, some people, you know, you run into, they're kind of, you know, not exactly all there, that, you know, talk to themselves and mumble, and, you know, that's a really interesting EVP.
Yeah, there. It is.
That's good stuff, Herb.
Thanks a lot.
So did you have a good time?
Oh, God, yes. And like I said before, I mean, anytime you guys need any help on any investigation, I'm only 5.5-6 hours away. You know, let me know, and I'll be glad to help out.
Yeah, okay. we're trying to book more stuff. Maybe Nick and I were talking, maybe try a different place this coming year. We don't know. We're going to try to price it out. So you'll be hearing from us.
Definitely.
All right, Herb, thank you very much. And Herb Street Method, you can go to whispersradio.com, get in touch with Herb. If you want to email Herb to find out, I guess, or you want a copy of any of this, it's Herb 222 or 224man@AOL.com.
Who know who? Go ahead.
Or
I'm sorry.
You guys can find me on Facebook as well, herbstreet@facebook.com.
Yep, and you're there and you answer your stuff pretty quick. So, I mean, that's. You know, there's no reason why you can't contact and get a hold of you, get some of this stuff. So if you were there especially, I know I know several people that said that they walked around with you. I think they were the ones. They're the ones that are waiting, ready to grab any of this because they want to know what, you know, what happened. They were telling stories. Actually, one of the people that walked around with you was the next day here recording and playing stuff back and listen to this, you know, so.
Awesome.
So they caught the bug. You were contagious. You're contagious.
There was quite a few people that were recording on their iPhones.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And they were catching the same voices that I caught at same time. So it helped solidify what I'm doing. You know, I mean, if there's multiple people there, and I don't even know who these people are, and they're picking up the same exact voices at the same exact time, that solidifies 110% what I'm trying to do here.
Especially on different media, because I don't think it's fair to call an iPhone a digital voice recorder, you know?
Yeah, but you know, you get the video, you get the digital recorder, you get the iPhone, and if you can get more than one, that just, you know, adds on more validity to what's happening.
Oh, definitely. And like I tell everyone before, you know, you really got to go out there and try this methodology in the field, and you'll see for yourself that it does work, and it's a fantastic way to communicate with the other side.
Well, great. Well, we got to get going here. We're running out of time. Hour goes by really quick.
Herb, thanks a lot. But
we'll be in touch.
All right. Thank you, guys.
All right.
We'll see you.
Herb.
That phone call, was that a question or?
It was Barb. She really, that light one is bothering her. She really could hear something.
Really?
I had my head, you know, I never turned my headset up, but I had it, and I couldn't.
Well, I know last...
But I've got them saved. I mean, the folder's here.
Yeah. The last time, I tried to hear something, I couldn't hear anything in that one. The last time, at least for the iPhone app, iPod Touch app people, you know, I upload the... EVPs we received separately as, you know, bonus content for our podcast. So if, you know, if you're out there, you have an iPhone, iPod Touch, I'll be doing the same thing whenever we have EVPs. That way you can listen to them separately, play them for your friends, you know, agonize over them, trying to see what are they saying. So, Jordan?
Oh. The Valley's Watchdog, AM 1600, WKKS.
We'll see you next week, everybody. Until then, don't be afraid, only believe.